Happy Tuesday, and welcome to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this week I'm sharing with you a conversation that I had backstage at the Live Oak Music Festival this past summer with Sunny War. I wasn't prepared for my conversation with Sunny, and usually I don't go into my conversations with a lot of prep and a lot of questions. I try to let them just kind of go wherever they're going to take us. But I wasn't prepared for how raw and honest Sunny was from the minute we sat down and started talking. Because usually we start off with the business of life. What's your music? What's your genre? What brought you to music? And then we kind of drift into whatever life stories kind of support the business. But with Sunny, it was all about her life story and how that influenced her music. And I kept thinking we would pull back to the music and what influences her and how she gets inspired. But instead, Sunny kept wanting to weave in the story of who she is and everything she experienced. And so if I were to just play my conversation with Sunny, you might be concerned about her. Just listening to the story, you would think, wow, this is a young woman who's really struggled in her life. And just hearing the conversation would be a disservice to who Sunny is today, because her music is a testament to her resiliency and really is much more of an indication of the person that she is. Not to diminish the power of the story or the conversation, because it definitely added layers to who she is and gave some foundation to what her music is. But you can't really have one without the other to fully understand or maybe get a feel for who Sunny War is. So today I'm going to do things a little unconventionally, and I'm going to start off the show not just with our conversation, but I want to play you one of her songs so that you can get an essence and a sense of her spirit and who Sunny is, and then we'll jump into the conversation. So although we won't be taking phone calls today, you can still be a part of the conversation, as always, by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or by following us on our Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT, following us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can also listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org or podcast the show by visiting Apple Podcasts, search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and the shows will be uploaded to your device to listen at your convenience. To kick it off, here's Sunny War and her song, Till I'm Dead.
The sun came in without warning, like an anxious child. It woke me out of this morning, I just had to smile. I got no money, I got no friends, I got nowhere to go, the fun never ends. I like to drink, I like to cry, and I don't wanna live.
Thank you.
there's no time for sorrow, not until I'm dead. I got no money, I got no friends, I got nowhere to go. The fun never ends. I like to drink, I like to cry, and I don't want to live, and I don't want to die. I got no money, I got no friends, I got nowhere to go. The fun never ends. I like to drink, I like to cry, and I don't want to live, and I don't want to die, die, die.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you just heard Till I'm Dead by Sunny War. Sunny and I met backstage at the Live Oak Music Festival this past summer and instantly jumped into a conversation about her life, her influences, what she's experienced, her struggles, her triumphs, her travails, her life on the streets. And I wanted to start the show by playing a song by Sunny so you could get a sense of how her life experiences have influenced her music. But now I'm going to jump into my conversation with Sunny War. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll get the business piece out of the way and then we'll talk about life and fun stuff. But what is your music to you? Why is the audience so moved by what you're doing?
I guess like my music for me is kind of like a diary or something. 'Cause now I have some songs that I can't relate to anymore, and then newer songs that I know I wouldn't have understood earlier. So I think it's just kind of like a way to, I don't know, to see if I'm changing or not as a person, or like personally, that's how, or I use it as therapy for myself, really.
All right, so then how did you discover that music was therapeutic for you? When did it come into your life?
Well, I started playing guitar when I was 7, but I think like in maybe when I was like 11 was when I really started using it to try to block everything out, just because I didn't have any friends and my parents were like fighting a lot, so I just started like zoning out to guitar.
But how did you know to pick up the guitar? Were your parents musical? Were the instruments around the house and accessible?
My stepdad he sang in a band like that was kind of like a rock band, and then my uncle plays bass, and then even my mom's friends were mostly musicians, so I didn't know. I was always around musicians.
So it wasn't that strange that all of a sudden the guitar was in your hands?
No, yeah. Because even, like, there, some of her friends, even in Tennessee, like, there's a guy that was my stepdad's friend, and he had a whole room, but it was all guitars all over the wall. It's the whole room. And he was like, because you would record there. So I always remembered, there was all, like, I could even play with them when I was younger than 7, because it was just like, there's so many of them.
It was the playroom, basically.
Yeah.
And so you grew up in Nashville.
Partially.
Okay.
Or I was born in Nashville, and then I lived there maybe till I was 9 or something. Then it's like at one point we moved to Denver, then we moved to Detroit and stayed with my grandma for a while, and then I feel like we moved back to Tennessee before even coming to LA. But it's like it was between Detroit, Denver, Tennessee, and then California.
Was it just you and your mom then?
It was me and my mom, and then later me, my mom, and my stepdad when we moved to LA, but so confusing. Then sometimes I lived with my grandma I lived with her sometimes.
So it's almost like the guitar became your one consistent companion.
I would say, yeah.
Yeah. So do you remember the first song you ever wrote?
I don't know. I think probably, I know I wrote a song about, like, can you spare a quarter to me for the gumball machine? I remember that song.
And was that for the actual gumball, or was that some angsty? Yeah.
No, I really meant it, you know?
And did you come up with a gumball? Was there anyone that brought the quarter?
No, it just never happened, but I like seeing that. And then the first one I wrote as, like, when I started this band, Anus Kings, like, that was in high school. I wrote Man of My House, which that was, like, my first song that I would consider, like, a song or whatever.
But when you talk about your songs kind of being your diary, do you still relate to that song, Man of Your House? Does it still resonate?
It does, but it was, like, that was when I was a kid, though, because it's, like, to me, because it's, like, because my mom would make me fix stuff all the time. This was after my mom got a divorce, so then it was just us two. And I was, like, fixing toilets and, like, sinks and stuff. And I just was, like, I just felt like, damn, I'm the man of the house. I'd fix everything around here. I'd do everything. It's like, I'd take out the trash. That was me being kind of, like, that was, like, kind of a teenager thing.
Yeah.
But then later it started to mean more to me. Like, but I can't, yeah, I guess I can't. I am still the man of my house, though. I guess I just live alone, though.
So you can't turn to anyone and say, your turn, to she fix the toilet.
Yeah, I am the man of the house for now, yeah.
And so how long, so L.A. became your home at what age?
L.A., we moved, I think I was 13, because I went, I did ninth grade in L.A., so I think I was 13. And then that was terrible. It wasn't terrible, but that's when I got into punk rock.
How did you choose punk rock of all genres?
Well, I'd never really heard it before. Oh, I love you.
And so was
so
it
I think because I met the kids I was hanging out with, then it was like, well, that was also the age where I was just getting into music in general, though, because because that's when you really start looking for stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like high school is when you're really, like, actually going to record stores and stuff.
Right, and what's my identity outside of my family or in my peer group, or who is my peer group?
Yeah. So that, and the internet, you know, I think that was right when YouTube was really, I feel like YouTube didn't exist before then. Or maybe it did, but
you found
that
it.
That made it where I could listen to anything. So I liked that. I still love punk music, but I think now it sounds, some of it, the stuff I used to listen to sounds funny to me. I still think it's good, but sometimes I think, like, who could listen to that every single day, though? Like, because now I get it, because my mom did not like that.
Yeah, so was it kind of the punk was a rebellion against your mom because she didn't like it?
No, I just, I didn't even want her to hear, I was into it, because mm-hmm. it's, but also I think it's, like, as a guitar player, I think it's fascinating to hear different, because I went through a metal phase, too, but it's just because if I hear a different way somebody's playing guitar, I'm like, it fascinates me. Like, even, like, now, more recently, I'm like, I like bossa nova.
Interesting.
Just because it's different. So I think, like, most guitar players kind of go through any genre that involves guitar. Just because you're like, well, how do you make it do that? How do you make it do that? So I don't even know anymore if I actually liked. Because even before punk, I was, like, listening to a lot of classic rock, but it was, like, I wanted to hear people shred, mm-hmm. you know, and I would try to imitate it. But I don't actually know if I like that kind of music or not. I like to hear what you could do with the guitar, though.
The technicality of it.
Yeah.
So do you consider yourself a guitar a guitar player or a singer-songwriter? What's your first identity with that?
Now, I used to consider myself a guitar player because I never wanted to sing or anything. And the first band I started, I thought I was just going to be the guitarist because our plan was to find a singer, okay, me and the bass player, and then we never did. So then I ended up singing, but I didn't really want to, especially because I had like a lisp and like I didn't want to try to sing.
Like you're kind of holding your own voice back a little bit, maybe?
I don't know.
Is it like the exposure of, maybe it's too raw when you're the singer? Like when you're playing the guitar, right? It's like the guitar becomes your identity. It's
like... I like that. I only like the guitar, really.
Okay.
Because I never spent hours singing. That was my favorite thing. But now I feel more like a singer-songwriter because I kind of stopped developing as a guitarist like three years ago. So it's like, it's not like I'm actually pushing to get better at guitar.
Right, so you don't spend hours refining your technique.
I spent hours writing, though.
Okay.
Or, like, trying to think of arrangements and stuff. But not so much as... Like, I used to actually practice scales and, like, try to, like... Because I had an idea that I was going to be Slash or something.
Oh, okay. That's what I was going to ask you. Like, who were you aspiring to be?
That was when I was younger, though.
Now, who would it be? I guess it's
now
just...
Now, I would like to be Nina Simone.
Really?
Yeah.
And tell me why.
Because she's moving to me. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I feel like... There's not a lot of people I can listen to where I just feel like I understand everything that they're saying. Or, like, I don't... Like, there's people I listen to where I'm like, I wonder what they mean by that.
Mm-hmm.
But I still like it. But I feel like with Nina Simone, I just feel like I know her or something. Mm. So
do
I
you,
like her, yeah. Yeah.
Do you resonate with people's lyrics or the melody of the tune? Like, what draws you in?
It depends... I think with her, I like her lyrics, but then it's also the delivery. Like, there's something, like, really, like, raw. Like, I feel like I would not want to fight her, you know?
On stage, like, or just on the street, like, somewhere?
I could just tell, like, she's a very, like, she would have been very, like, direct. Like, I like that. Which kind of reminds me of, that's also another thing I liked about punk music. So in a weird way, I get the same feeling if I listen to Nina Simone and if I listen to, like, a hardcore band. Like, I feel the same directness, and I like that.
So is it the energy or the power behind it?
It's the energy, I guess, yeah. Because it's like there's a lot of stuff that's just not really specifically talking about anything, you know? But it's still art. It's, like, still beautiful. I guess I like how bold people... That's why I like Bob Dylan. Like, I like protest music, and I like when people are actually talking about something. Which, that's more something I'm afraid of to do, I feel like.
Taking an actual activist stand on something?
Well, I guess, like, really, really talking specifically about things... That's challenging, like, lyrically to me. Just because it's like, I feel like I train myself to make things broader so that they can be relatable in different ways. But then I also like the idea of, I don't know, it's like, I would just have to play around with the idea, I guess.
Last year I talked to... Sean Rowe, he was here, and he said that he had gotten to a point where he could only write protest songs, that he was done just entertaining people, and that he now needed to have something to say.
That's cool. That's a good idea.
But do you find your... I mean, you enjoy so many different types of music. I would imagine there's a lot of different stories in you to tell.
I don't know. I hope not.
I mean, do you think there's a limit to the stories that you're going to be tapping into?
Well, I don't think I'd tell stories. Well, maybe. Yeah. But most of them are all, to me, they're all the same, really. It's either I'm complaining about being poor, or I'm just talking about men are terrible and I hate them. Or it's like really like what I think of what the actual what really inspired. It's like, oh, okay, this is 'cause I was broke and I couldn't pay rent, so I wrote that song. And then this one is just like, I hate my boyfriend and I want to kill him, and everyone that has a penis needs to die. It's like they both go. And then the other one is like drinking. Like, I used to love to write about being an alcoholic and just feeling like, but there's no other way to live. Like that. So it's really just three things,
So
really.
literally a diary.
Yeah.
A lyrical diary.
Yeah, to me it's that, yeah.
So where are you now in your life? Because it seems like you've had a journey of self-discovery, and I think I read that you'd lived on the streets at some point when you were building your career, and you've been poor. Like, that's a true
Yeah.
story.
No, I left home when I was like four. I was like, oh wait, I dropped out in 10th grade and I
Okay.
left. So I was like 15. I think I was 15.
Did your mom give you her blessing to take off, or was this a
No,
rebellious teen thing?
I just was over it. I was
Okay.
just so over it. Like,
Like having to
even
fix everything?
not that. It's just like, I just felt, it's like I couldn't do school and like I was failing, and then it was like, then I started like skipping class, and then she started getting mad about that and about my grades. But it was like, I really just couldn't. I always had a problem with school my whole life, and then later I found out I just think it didn't, the format didn't work for me, because it's like I went to adult school later. And I just like did it in 2 days. So I
Like
was
to get
like,
your to
I got
finish your
my GED.
GED?
I did the whole, like, they had these booklets. They're like, you have to complete. And I just did it. And I was like, if they would have just gave it to me like that. Because then I was like, so it's not even that I don't know it.
Right.
So I was just like, and then this whole time I thought I was just like dumb, or like I just couldn't, like, why can't I do it or something. But it's just really, I just never did my homework or anything. But like, I was tired of going to school, and I was tired of her like arguing with me about school. Like, it just felt weird. It just felt like, what are we even talking about?
Like you were done almost
I
with the
was just like,
parent-child
yeah,
relationship had ended.
I was like, okay, like it was just like, and then other thing, it was like I was starting to drink, and like I was starting to go to shows, and I felt like I was already kind of an adult, especially when I started busking. I started busking probably the first time I went, I went like when I was 14. I wanted to buy a guitar, a different guitar. Then that's when I first got the idea to play on the boardwalk. And then later, it's like I just did that anytime I needed money, that's what I would do. So
Just throw a
then,
hat out in front of you somewhere.
yeah, or I have my case, my guitar case, and I would play on the boardwalk. And then after that, I just felt like, well, why do I even need a mom?
I'm sure she loves hearing
Not like that,
that.
but it was sort of like, it was like if I was hungry, I could go get food, I could do all kinds of stuff. And it's like all she ever did was say, like, why don't you do your homework? Why did you skip class? Blah, blah, blah.
Mom things.
Yeah, and I was just like so tired of trying to explain it. I was like, what do I need school for? Because I really didn't understand what I was gonna. It's like other kids had plans, like they want to go to school for this, and then they want to go. They already knew what college they. It's like everybody had a plan, and I didn't really even have an idea. And I felt like it would have been a waste of money and time to go to college and not know what you were even. I don't know, it just felt weird. It just felt like it would have been a bad mistake, I felt like.
Like there was a conveyor belt of people being pushed through life, and you were kind of off the conveyor belt looking and going, do I
I
want to get
just,
on there?
yeah,
Do I want to do that?
if I had an idea, I would have, but I didn't have an idea, so it was like, and I was like, what am I gonna do for the rest of my life? And I couldn't figure it out, so I just didn't want to go anymore. I was depressed though.
Really?
I was really
so
sad.
So it wasn't like it was a happy, free-go-lucky time in your life?
No, yeah, because I was getting sad in school. And I was just feeling, it made me feel really bad.
Was it like the peer group piece or the education piece?
I just could, it's like I would try because of my mom to pay attention and I couldn't. So it's like it went on, it's because they were talking too long about the same thing. And sometimes I would just fall asleep and it felt like I couldn't stop. Like, you know, when your eyes are heavy and you just can't open your eyes, it kept happening in every class. So I really started feeling like I was like thinking I'm dumb. Like I must be.
So when you left school, finished the GED and you're out on your own, where did you go?
Well, I didn't get the GED till years after that because. Yeah, but first I went to Venice, then I found out my mom was looking for me in Venice, so I had to go to San Francisco.
Oh, so it wasn't like your mom said, have a nice life.
No, she was like looking for me, I told her, I was like, I don't live with you no more, I live by myself, I live on the beach.
And did you find a community on the beach? Like, was there a community in Venice?
Yeah, that's another problem. That's when I met all the train operators and stuff. Uh-huh. And they kind of took me. I was like, I was gone then. Because then it was like, I was eating out of dumpsters and stuff. Which, it was amazing, though.
Okay.
I can't explain it. It's like, they're like meeting street kids that were purposely street kids that considered themselves to be anarchists and stuff and like just sort of teaching me all kinds of crazy things, and then we just would hop trains and we would hitchhike, and like I even went to a rainbow gathering, and the first thing I did, I just ate acid, and then I ended up being there for like months.
Oh, really?
And I was playing guitar every day for hours. I was just playing all day.
And so you found kind of a tribe, a group.
Yeah.
That sustained you.
Yeah.
But then...
But they were good, but then sometimes they were bad. Because now, like, when I think about it now, it's like, they were like, in their 20s.
Mm-hmm. And you were 16.
Like, and I was 16, so it's like... Now I'm like, drinking with 16-year-olds, I wouldn't do that. You know, like I think about it now.
It would be illegal. So,
I'm kind of but I'm like, I wouldn't even want to. I don't know. I would never, I would give somebody some food. I wouldn't give anybody alcohol. I wouldn't, anytime someone asks me to buy them beer outside, I'm like, nah, I'm not doing that. Because I've been drunk on the street when I was 16. And when I think about it now, I'm like, were those my friends? You know, like, they were older. And then that's another thing, because they're older than me. I thought they were so cool and everything. And it's like, but they also knew how to drink. And it's like, I actually wasn't that experienced with that. So it was kind of like a disaster. It's like, I would have been probably somebody to be like, you shouldn't drink, because I'm an alcoholic. And this is terrible. Like, it's better than not have a vice at all.
So is drinking still a vice for you?
Now I kind of feel like only if I'm not busy. That's when it gets... But now I'm more busy. But I also am learning how to create things even when there is nothing. Like, I like to try to make... At least, like, spend 5 hours working on something, even if I don't have anything to do that day.
So like, you kind of make sure your mind has a mission.
Because that's when it gets hard. It's like, I could be on tour for a whole month and then I could be like, really have nothing to do for the next 3 weeks. And I just don't know what to do with myself. Then I start drinking. And then it's like, it gets a little bit more extreme every week. And then it's like, I don't know. It can get bad. But actually... Now that I'm not sad, I don't think it doesn't get that bad anymore.
So when did you stop feeling the sadness?
About a month and a half ago.
Oh. Yeah. So what triggered this change?
I broke up with my boyfriend.
You dropped anchor.
Yeah. And I'm like,
let go of an anchor.
I feel so much better. I was with him for 4 years.
Really?
Yeah. I feel so much better now.
All right. So how did you find the courage to do that?
We had a really, really big fight and he broke all of my stuff. So at that point, it was like, we can't really even fix this anymore.
Right, because the next thing that gets broken is you.
Yeah, it's not... like...
So is this, would you say this is one of the first times in your life you've felt this good?
Yeah. No, mostly because also, because it made me feel like, because even before him, I dated two other guys that were sort of weird like that too. So I think it's, I feel like saying no to him is like saying no to all of them. Like, just sort of like, I'm not going to take anything I think is abusive ever again. Because I think, because it's like I grew up seeing a lot of stuff like that, that it's like hard for me to know what I think is natural and okay or healthy. Because I don't
actually
have
normalized a little bit.
A real, yeah, I don't. So now I'm just learning more about what do I consider to be abuse or whatever.
Have you written up a list of Sunny's demands for how to be treated?
No. I will, though.
And what songs have come out of this last month and a half?
Oh, one I'm working on, it's called A Love So True. And it's more like, it's kind of just talking about like, oh, it's summertime, like, maybe you can meet somebody, I don't know.
So you went back to the hopeful heart part?
Like, maybe there's someone who's still out there.
Do you really think that's true?
No.
So you're a little jaded.
That's another thing that I'm really mad about, that I don't want to be straight. Because I was thinking, like, if I could figure out how to be attracted to women, I could like be happy. Because I'm like, I can't explain it, because it's like, even my guy friends that I think are really smart, I'm still like, oh, but there's still something about you that I hate. Like, I can't explain it.
It's like the essence of masculinity somehow has been wrecked.
It's something
for you.
In how they're raised. Mm-hmm. They have this weird condescending thing that they do. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I just think it's so annoying and weird. Because then sometimes I think, like, if I would talk to people like that, people would know that was rude. But it's when they do it, it just messes with me. And then I'm like, why am I still trying to be with them?
Right.
It just sucks. That's when the drinking comes, when I think about that.
Okay.
And I'm like, nah, I don't need it. I'm going to just have a drink.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest is Sunny Warr. And we're talking backstage at the Live Oak Music Festival this past summer. And although we're not taking calls in the studio today, I'm happy to be sharing with you pieces of our conversation and also weaving in some of Sunny's music so you can really get a sense of who she is. Because her story is so almost unbelievable, all that she's experienced and overcome in such a short period of time, and then the depth of the music that she writes that reflects those experiences. So before we jump back into our conversation, I wanted to share with you another bit of a song by Sunny Warr, If It Wasn't Broken. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
You met enter, so is the drum. Brings me rhythm when I've got none. How would you know you had a heart if it wasn't broken? If it wasn't broken. Lost your job, so you lost all faith in the one you called God. You came to me for refuge.
So how did you get from being at the Rainbow Gathering to where you are today? What, because you ended up in San Francisco at some point. Like, who finally, whoa, what happened that all of a sudden you were Sunny Wore on stage being paid to do this and not hanging out with your guitar case?
I got arrested. That's what happened.
Okay, where?
In Petaluma County. Or that, well, it's not, it's Tacoma, no.
Sonoma?
Sonoma, but Petaluma is in there. And then I was in jail for like almost a year.
For what?
Because I had a nervous breakdown in a mall and I broke a window in the mall, and it was charged as grand theft because I broke the mall window. So I was there for a year. I went home and I like tried to get a job and stuff. It was like something about being locked up. I was just like, cause it was like,
did they give you counseling? I mean, clearly you sobered up, right? Cause you couldn't get alcohol.
Yeah.
But did they offer you any sort of mental health counseling?
No.
So how did you find your grounding again? How did you find your footing?
Well, I came back to LA. I tried to get a job. Then I got arrested again because I was stealing clothes at Macy's. I was literally stealing clothes to go to a job interview.
Really?
Yeah. But my mom, I called my mom from jail and she was like, what the hell? And I was like, she was like, you could have just got clothes for me. Then I was doing other stuff too. I wasn't just drinking, I was doing other stuff. And my mom knew that. And she was like, you can't live with me. My friend has a sober living. Mm. So I went and lived at the sober living for like.
How old were you then? When was this?
I was 18 or 19 when I got in there.
So you're like 3 years kind of on the streets.
Yeah.
Or a year in jail. 2 years on the streets, a year in jail.
And then, yeah. Then I was there. I lived there for like 2 years.
In the sober living?
Yeah. But I was still working on my songs and stuff.
And where is the turn the corner part?
Because the sober living was.
So that really was
my
it?
Mom, because I was staying with my mom. And then when I left to get the clothes, because I was trying to get a job. And then I called her from jail. Then I think that's when she was like, okay, you have a drug problem. Like,
right.
You're crazy and you're on drugs. She was like, you can't live with me anymore, but you can live at the sober living.
So she kind of saved you.
Yeah. I think the sober living was good because it was far away from everything in L.A. Because it was in L.A., but it was like 2 hours away from anybody I knew. And I was going to meetings every day. And it was, I mean, I'm not sober, but I think it was like hearing people's stories, mm-hmm, that helped. Because it was like a lot of the people, they would be like, yeah, I ran away from home when I was 12 because my mom was an alcoholic and I had no. It was like hearing different stories of like similar. And then, but some of them would be like, I went to prison. They had different bad things, like. So I think it just made me realize, like, yeah, I could end up in prison just for being crazy. So I should probably try to fix myself or try to act normal or whatever.
If I can't actually be there, just pretend.
Yeah, just like. And another thing, I also got locked up in psych wards a lot. Like, throughout the whole time that I was on the streets, like, I was always getting taken to psych wards all the time. And that was, like, another thing.
Did they medicate you or give you treatment? Or just hold you for 72 hours?
I would stay sometimes for a long time. I was on, I don't know what they were giving me, probably Seroquel and some other stuff, but like before I was even 14, I spent the longest time as a child in a psych ward. I was in there, I feel like I was in there almost a year the first time. And that was in Watts. And they gave me so much. The second day I was there, I fainted on the floor because they gave me too much, I don't know, Seroquel, whatever else it was, I don't even know. And they were giving me too much medication that I was like a zombie. And then, it's like, they would ask me the same questions every day. And it's like, I just barely, sometimes I would be drooling. They've given me too much.
Yeah.
When I was like 13, I weighed like 90 pounds. So it was just like, some of the kids were from, their parents got deported and they were in the psych ward. But like now I'm like, how long do you hold a kid in a psych ward just because their parents got deported? Or even some of the kids, their parents got arrested. So I'm like, so that's where you take the kids that if their parents get arrested? Like, I made a whole report about that. About that psych ward, you're supposed to take them to a group home.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed, only crazy kids should be in psych ward. I earned my spot.
Did you?
But the rest of them, I was like, some of these kids don't deserve to be here. So.
But although you had the understanding that you weren't, I mean, if anyone believes they're crazy.
I had nervous breakdowns that used to be, they could be extreme.
Interesting.
Reaction. Yeah. But I also think that I didn't understand what was real and what wasn't real. So, like, that first time that I went to the psych ward as a kid, I jumped in somebody's car and started driving it. And it was because the reason why was because I got raped by this guy. And I was, like, I started losing my mind. And it was, like, everywhere. I kept on looking everywhere. I have PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, but now I would have never been able to actually figure that out.
Right, verbalize what it was.
I just thought I was losing my mind, you know? Like, that's why it's better if somebody really young just stays home. Because it's like, I didn't even understand why I was reacting to stuff the way I was.
Too young to have the experience with life, right? To know what's happening or going on.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Because now I can actually go back and I could be like, no, this happened, and then this happened, and that's why. And I don't know. It makes me mad, though, actually. It kind of makes me mad.
Angry for you as a kid and other kids.
Yeah. I'm going to start working with kids, though.
Are you?
Hopefully in the fall. Because Aaron works, the bass player works with kids. It's called Rock Camp. It's an after-school program. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start teaching there, too.
So where are you now in your life? How did you get to the place, again, that you're going on a tour this summer and are lining up for your music? What was the break?
After the rehab thing, first I moved downtown. Well, I lived there and then I got evicted. That was my first apartment. But at least I had a taste of, okay, so you have to pay rent, this thing called rent.
Every month.
Yeah, and then there's the electricity. That was the first thing that went, the electricity. But that was my first try. I got kicked out of that place. Then I found a warehouse. It was like kind of like an artist warehouse where they were only charging $300 a month. And it was like basically these little weird rooms. It was crazy. That was the craziest place to ever live. But I managed to busk $300 a month to pay that. So that was kind of my first time. Then I got the idea, like, instead of paying rent like this, I could go to school and get financial aid. So then I got my GED. I went to Long Beach Adult School. I got my GED in 2 days. Then I had figured out how to go to Glendale Community College. And I was, like, taking music business and something. Then I finally got my financial aid. That was why I was going. Then I just dropped out, and I used the check to pay my rent for a couple months. You know, chill, you know. But I finished my album, the first one, Worthless. Because I was working on, I was writing it at the warehouse.
Interesting.
So then my friend recorded it for me, who I met in Venice when I was busking. Because he had his own studio downtown. Then I ended up getting kicked out of that warehouse, too. That was crazy. But then, so I had that one. I made another record probably like 2 years after that with my friend Brian on bass. That one's okay. That one I didn't like.
That's your favorite.
Yeah. But then, I don't know, then after that, I finally met Harlan. That's when I recorded with the Sun. But I had left to Texas somewhere, like, after Red, White, and Blue. That was the album after Worthless. Then I moved to Austin for a while with this guy I was dating to work at this punk club that my friend opened this punk bar called Infest. And, like, then he started using heroin and stuff. Then everything crumbled. And I was like, it was really cool at first because, like, I was going to be a booker and I was, like, promoting shows and stuff. And it was something I wanted to do. And I was, like, also working at the bar. Like, I actually felt like, oh, I have a real job now. Mm-hmm. Like, but then he started getting worse and worse. So then I was, like, then somewhere I went to Brazil, too, from there. I got a gig doing a tour in Brazil. Because my friend, Guillermo, he's from Colombia. So he knew bookers in South America. So I ended up going to Brazil, and then I came back and I used the money to move back to LA because I also didn't want to be with that guy that mm-hmm. I was with either.
You're good at the breakups.
Yeah.
Start over.
Yeah. So I came back to LA. Then I got an apartment, a 2-bedroom, and then I had roommates. So then I started working on, that's when I started writing with the Sun. So that was like, when I moved back from Texas, that was like 5 years ago.
Wow. And did things just start taking off then?
Well,
because it sounds like you really didn't have the intention to be a singer-songwriter, touring musician, even up until the Texas part. You were happy being a booker for other people. Like, when did the, oh, wait, I can make this my career. This can be my thing. When did that become a reality? Like, when did you believe it?
I'm not sure if I believe it now.
Really?
Because I know a lot of people that maybe they did, they got, I feel like things can fade away, you know? Mm. Or I don't know, actually. I guess I don't know.
Like, you don't trust it.
I don't have as much faith in the singer-songwriter genre.
Peace. Okay.
So, because a band, but I guess I, as far as, like, people I know personally, I only know bands. I don't really know a lot of folk musicians, really. So I guess I just don't know how, because I don't know how it works. Because it's like, there's a lot of bands, like, they can get paid to play on a Friday night at a bar. Even if they're just a local band, like, that could be their gig. Like, I feel like you can't really do that as much as, like, a singer-songwriter type of thing. So I feel like it's, I just don't understand how do you try to market that, I guess.
But, so how do you identify yourself right now, then? Just a member of a band?
Well, now we're a band.
Okay.
Or I want it to be a band, because I also just like the idea of, like, being able to jam on something. Because I can't, I feel like when I play by myself, it's just like, okay, this is how the song, I'm not obsessed with acoustic music like I used to be. So, because I actually do play electric guitar by myself, and I kind of have been writing with it, but I don't feel like I could do that solo. I feel like it needs to be a band for it to really sound. I feel like I'm just going to go more into a different direction, maybe.
You like to switch things up. I mean, clearly, your story is not one of, and then I stayed here forever. It's like, and then this happened, and then I was there. It's almost like you would just follow the doors that open or the curiosity you have.
I get bored and I get new ideas,
yeah.
I guess. Like, even now, I kind of want to move from LA, maybe. I don't know if it would be this year or next year, but my plan is to try to save and move somewhere else. It might still be California, though. I might live, like,
Probably not Petaluma.
Nah, not Petaluma. Which is weird, because I actually thought that was a nice town before that. Yeah. Before I got arrested, I was like, Petaluma is nice. And then, like, now, yeah. I'm still paying them. I owe them money for a public defender. I'm still paying it. Dude, yeah, I can't get arrested nowhere. That's, yeah.
So where's Sunny War in 5 years? What conversation do you think we'll be having 5 years from now?
I don't know. I just want to try different things, mm-hmm. I guess.
So 5 years from now, we'll just see where you are.
Yeah. hopefully alive.
Okay, we'll feed that online. And maybe with a guy that treats you right.
No, solo.
Okay, solo fighter. Yeah. Sunny War, thank you so much for sitting down and chatting with me this afternoon.
Thanks for talking to me.
Before you rip your girl to shreds, be sure you really want her dead. By the time you realize you were wrong, you'll find the girl you she can no longer feel sorry for your baby. She much too busy being crazy, 'cause it's a hell of a world. She's just a shell of a girl. She's just a shell of a girl. She's just a shell of a girl.
You've been listening to my conversation with Sunny War, singer, songwriter, musician, backstage at Live Oak Music Festival this past summer. And as you can tell, I thoroughly enjoyed my conversation with Sunny because she was so open and honest and no pretense, willing to just share her story and who she was as she saw it in the moment and as she sees herself moving forward, and to embrace her restlessness, or how easily she gets bored with musical styles or with genres or with songs and jump into something new. She's spontaneous, she's open, she's joyous, she's introspective, and she has a lot to share. I want to thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. You can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or follow us on Instagram, elizabeth_TRT. You can follow us on our Facebook page, and you can also podcast the show by visiting Apple Podcasts or however you find your podcast. Search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and our shows will be uploaded to your device. And you can listen to all of our previous shows by visiting kcbx.org. As always, I appreciate you joining us for this conversation and for your continued support of Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I leave you today with Sunny War's Age of a Man.
3, 4. Mess of man, get the strips of your manhood. I ain't the girl next door, I'm no good. I could bring you to laugh like your mama, but you refuse my advice, call it drama. Like you left your son and daughter with a woman who learned first hand. You're just a boy, the age of a man. The age of a man. I really don't have time for the needy, but when it comes to mine, I'm greedy. Do just proper, and it seems you don't have much to offer other than that old cat and mouse. Like pretend you want to play house, building castles made of sand. You're just a boy, the age of a man. The age of a man. We'll be right back.
rules you live by. You call me high strung, I guess I'll try to learn something today for tomorrow, to make sure to repay what I borrow. And all the girls will leave you bitter, still looking for a babysitter. You stood in place while others ran. You're just a boy, a boy. Of a man.